welcome to episode number 6 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thanks for joining us again. I would say it's been a bit of a big week in running, but it hasn't really. It's been a bit of a quiet week. Thanks for joining me, Bradley and Julian.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Yeah. Good evening. Brad, first up to you. Have you come down from your heights of that amazing interview you conducted last week yet?
Yeah, it was always good catching up with Sean. Like, he just says some amazing things, and you sit there, you go, yep, everything you say is 100% correct. If only I could apply it to myself. Like, and I have been trying, but yeah, he's a phenomenal guy, and yeah, it'd be great to see him like full time coaching, like one day, like, you know, I guess once he's finished with his law career.
Yeah, nearly broke the internet. Plenty of good emails and good comments coming in. I think a lot of people, I know me personally, really related to a lot of the stuff he was talking about.
Yeah, so stay tuned for part two at the end of this podcast.
Yeah, what else has been happening? Big week of training?
Yeah, it's been a good week. A week of a lot of firsts, actually. So I'll sort of roll through my week, if you like.
Go for it, mate.
Yeah, so Monday was just two easy 40-minute runs, and probably for the first time ever, I've had two runs that were actually slower than 4:20 average. So one was like 4:25 and 4:22. So I was just trying to make a conscious effort just to try and slow down a little bit. Tuesday, my coach gave me five, but I decided to pull the pin at four just because I had never done the session before and I felt like I was working pretty hard. So the session I ended up doing was 4x1.2K hills, jog back recovery. And it was tough. It pissed down with rain just as I was finishing my warm-up, which made a section of the road, like the road was that steep in sections that I couldn't actually get a grip because the road was wet and I was slipping. But yeah, so I was pretty much running sort of 350 pace up the hill and floating back down in 355. But when you're doing hills that long, and you'd probably agree, Julian, when you do Mount Buninyong, like, you really need to gauge your effort because it's really easy to just go over the edge, and it's just impossible to bring your heart rate back down on a long hill. I felt like I got a lot of benefit from it. Like, the last minute and a half of every rep, probably felt the back end of how a marathon feels, where your quads are just burning and you just got to keep that turnover. It ended up being eight Ks worth of running at an average around 350. So nothing special on paper, but hopefully I'll get a fair bit of benefit from it. And each hill was about 70 meters of elevation over the 1.1K. So decent climb. So that was Tuesday. Wednesday, 2 hours. So that was a little bit slower than what I normally do as well. So that was like 4:23s. Thursday was just an hour in the morning at 4:24s. And Thursday afternoon, 40 minutes with some strides. And then on Friday morning, got out for 40 minutes. Again, sort of just over 4:20s. And then my session for that day was 2x5K with a 1K float. And I bought a pair of the Vaporflies the other week, and I decided that... Zoomfly. Yeah, Zoomfly. Thanks for the correction there.
And so sure, man, I'll do it.
After chatting to Julian about it, you know, working out what sort of sessions they would be most suited for, decided that the 2x5K with a K float would be ideal. Session went really well. I was starting to feel a bit tired towards the back end of the week, and first rep was 16:27. Heart rate was really controlled, sort of low 160s. Floated a kilometre in 3:45, and then ran the second rep in 16:01. And heart rate probably was ended up being four beats higher on the second, but still felt pretty controlled and only just hit 170. You know, last K was probably a bit quick. Like, I ran 3:06, which probably wasn't needed. But overall, felt really good. Loved the shoes as well. So I might be closer to buying those 4%ers off you, Julian.
Where'd you get the what's my goals from? Zoom 5. Julian sent them up for you?
No, I got them from the Nike factory outlet in Canberra.
I don't. I just, I just tee up all the fucking other shit that we review on here. He goes and buys it at the outlet.
but the shoes were great. Where I really noticed it was on the slight downhills, or from that foot strike to toe off, that real, like, my transition is generally pretty slow through that period, but I just felt like it really got me through the stride a lot quicker. So that was, a good session. Saturday, just an easy hour in the morning, about 4:20s, and then 35 minutes in the afternoon. And then Sunday, coach wanted me to do 32K, but try and find some decent climbs in it. So there's this Centenary Trail, which pretty much follows the border between ACT and New South Wales, and sort of out the back of my house, it's quite hilly. So I did that with Hugh Williams and Alan Craigie and Etienne, another one of Dick's boys. And, it was a tough run. It was close to 600 metres of climbing, averaged 4:13s for it, and then got out in the afternoon for 45 minutes. At sort of 4:15s, and it felt actually pretty good considering, the run that I did in the morning. So that was a week of 184 kilometres, which is about 3 kilometres short of my biggest ever. First time I've ever gone over sort of 2,000 metres of climbing in the week, and probably the longest I've actually been on my feet at 13 hours of training. So it was a good week for me.
Yeah, very solid. You like it, wise man, as a marathon guy, about, 10 weeks out from BWA, that's what you want to see?
12 weeks out, I think.
And what did you get injured at last time?
8 weeks?
8 weeks, yeah. We're still not through yet, are we?
No, we're not, but I'm not doing any, I wouldn't say I've done any marathon sesh, those 2x10K or...
I like that you're trying to take your foot off the gas as well on some of them. Long runs, double long runs during the week, you're getting the mileage in. As long as you're feeling good, that's the key. You should be feeling tired at that mileage, but tired's okay. You just don't want to be getting niggles before you start the real hard stuff.
Yeah. And it was good having that interview with Sean, because I interviewed him on the Tuesday night, and doing that session on the Friday, I just sort of had that thing in the back of my head where he's talked about, fourth gear and not overdoing it. And as I said, that last K was probably a little bit quick, but it wasn't like I finished and I was hands on knees, that sort of thing. I was able to get sort of straight into the cool down. So I'm going to probably keep that in the back of my head for a lot of the sessions over the next sort of 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, you hit 180K for the next 10 weeks or 8, 10 weeks, and the sessions aren't that important, really. Long as you're doing something, you're going to go there stronger than you ever have been.
Yeah, well, this week's an easy week, so I'll only run about 140 or so with a park run, but then I'll go back up to 100 plus miles. So once a month, I'll have a lighter week, which is about that 130 to 140.
Yeah.
The hills and that strength as well. That hill strength, getting all those hills in 1 week's good strength for you.
I've never done anything like that before. So it'll be interesting to see how, running sort of a park run this weekend off a bit of hill work feels.
Mm-hmm. Might talk about that at the end of the show when we might throw some predictions at you. Julian, talk through your week. Yep. A bit up and down again. Not feeling that good. Running all right, though. Look good on Strava.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can't remember where we were at last time, but I was definitely struggling early on. I ran Monday, got out there, but just felt like a little beat up after Sunday. I had a hip soreness after my Sunday run, and it went away during the Monday run, but there's something just not quite right. And then on Tuesday, I went down and ran a session at the Lamberis at the track. And it was, I think I did 4x2K. And it wasn't supposed to be a real killer session, but Dolce and I went down and I was aiming to run them in about 6:06. We had a lot of rest in between. 2.5 minutes. But it was supposed to feel easy, and it just did not feel easy to me. Like, I was really battling, and I had no extra gears to move when I needed to. And I just got the feeling something wasn't right. It's a session I've done plenty of times before that I've done faster than that and felt better. And I thought, oh, something's not right here.
Well, I think you'd go back and listen to the last 3 weeks, and I reckon you've said that every single track session you've done, and about that state 5K race. Like, you've just said you just haven't been feeling like you can go any quicker, like it's just been a struggle to hit the paces.
It has, and that was the session that really turned it for me. Because I guess when you talk about it a little more and you haven't had a solid session for a while, you start to think, gee, what is going on? Like, this isn't just a bad week. I'm not just tired today. Something's not quite right. And so on Wednesday, I woke up, did an hour in the bush, and then got to a hill. Oh, one thing that I really noticed on the Tuesday night was I did my strides, and I was puffed at the end of my strides, and my heart rate was just going through the roof. Like, my watch wasn't really picking it up, but I had my finger to my pulse, and it was just going bananas after strides. And I thought, oh no, this is going to be a tough session if this is happening. Like, the strides weren't even fast. They were kind of like the session pace. And then the next morning, Wednesday, I went out for this run, an hour, and I hit a hill, and halfway up, I was just, my heart was just going bananas. So I just stopped and basically like waited for my heart rate to go back and thought, all right, this is the turning point. Like, I have to find out what's going on. So I called my mate Brett, who is a doctor, and he organized some blood tests for me. And he went in, so I went and got those done, and I haven't even found out the proper results yet. He just said I've got, my hemoglobin was really high. I haven't got the iron studies back yet where it tells me my ferritin levels or anything, but he kind of said, this is probably just a stress build up. Maybe it's your work, maybe it's a bit of a marathon hangover. He said, just don't really worry about it too much. Just maybe relax a little bit and just not take everything so seriously. And that night I decided to try and get more sleep, and I was only going to run once a day, kind of like how Brad said last, or maybe a couple of weeks ago, he said back the mileage off. So I decided just one run a day, get an extra couple of hours sleep, really increase the quality of my sleep by like taking, I got a dog, sometimes he wakes me up in like the middle of the night. That shit's just not good for you. So I kicked him out of the house, shut all the doors, kicked the cat out. I'm going to sleep well. Took some Fenibut, which is a little secret pill that helps, it gets you into a REM sleep, like really high quality sleep situation. And I just nailed the sleep for like 4 nights in a row. And I ended up coming out on Saturday morning, and I did a session, which was a pretty good session for me for where I'm at. It's not the best session I've done, but I did 12K tempo around the lake, 4K. The goal was to go about 3:25, 3:20, 3:15. And then I started, and it felt easy the first 4K. So I ran 3:22 and thought, well, I'll try to just knock 5 seconds off each 4K without having a rest. And I did that in the last 4K, kind of with the wind, because it was pretty windy around the lake as normal. So it messed with the session a little bit. But the last 4K with the wind, and I ended up doing the session in 3:22, 3:17, and 3:10. So that was pretty good for where I was at, like earlier in the week. And it kind of was like, oh, okay, well, there's nothing wrong with me. Like, if you can do a session like that, if I could do it and feel good, because I felt really good doing it, then there's nothing wrong. Like, just needed some sleep, a bit of time off. And then I ran on Sunday morning out in the Uyans, which is in Geelong, which is a like a regional park. It's got a lot of mountain bike trails through it, but it also has a dirt road that runs around it called the Great Circle Drive. And I've had some killer long runs out there. And it's a place where you start as a group, but it's an anti Sean Crichton run because it gets a little like faster later. Always there's a big hill out the back of the Ueys, and you climb up for like 6-7 minutes, I reckon it is, and it just burns you. It gets steeper towards the end, and there's always a little bit of a test up that hill, and then you come downhill for about 6K to finish. So it's really easy to get carried away on that last six. So yeah, I felt really good after that 26K, and I feel like I'm back now. So I'm in a really positive state as we speak.
Yeah. Hey, you're still going to get the iron results though?
Yeah, I've got a message Brett later. I'm not too concerned about him, but I'm interested. So he'll look into him. I'm just not pressing him because he's just helping me out with a favour there.
Yeah, it's pretty good when that happens. You get the results the next day.
Yeah, I'll get the blood test the hour after I message him. Yeah. That's pretty nice too.
That is good. Brad, what were you going to say? Sorry to cut you off.
That's right. I think what the doctor was saying to you, though, about just maybe chilling out a little bit is probably a valid point. Because even that Tuesday session where you sort of went down with, and this is not really like you, you went down to the track with, I want to hit my 2K splits in this time. True, and then if you're not feeling good, and you're forcing yourself to hit them over the first couple of reps, it makes the back end of the session really hard. Whereas you're normally more on feel. So if you want to hit 6:06 per 2K, but you're feeling a bit off, then just run 6:10s. So maybe just take a little bit of pressure off in terms of having to hit splits.
Yeah, oh, I 100% agree. It's just, there is something difficult about running your first rep in a certain time and then running a poor next three after it. Like, there's something mentally really difficult about that, and you basically have to switch yourself off, switch the ego off, and just go, oh, this is okay. I'm going to run slower each rep, and it's not going to be a bad thing. And I probably wasn't there enough to do that.
And 2K reps on the track are hard. Like, they're hard when you're feeling good. Five solid laps.
So, yeah, five laps is a lot. It is. Yeah. Yeah, you do one and you're like, oh shit, a mile to go.
Yeah, and when you put it into perspective, if you went down to the track and you did, K reps in 3:03, like, that's a pretty good session. And you're trying to basically do two of those, back to back. So it's tough. So I think the session was actually pretty good.
It's pretty good when you look at it or explain it like that. But when you look at me, like how much pain I was in and how like cooked I was at the end of them, then it's not very good. Because it was probably had a more negative effect on me than a positive effect, I reckon. In my training anyway, in my mental space. Like, you can't, exactly how Sean said, I don't think you want to be going to the well in training, which is exactly what I did in that session.
Yeah.
And I think I listened to his podcast the next morning and I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah, we did. This guy's got a wire. Wednesday morning.
Yeah, I needed a Tuesday morning.
Come on, Brad, give it to us a day early next time.
Hey, I was up till 12:30 that night getting it to you Tuesday night.
You up drinking wine? Don't say you were up doing podcast interviews. You were drinking glasses of red, I reckon, all night. That's what you were doing.
Yeah, he does like a glass of red, but by the time I got home and worked out how to actually get it to you, it was 12:30, which is 3 hours past my bedtime.
Yeah, it did a good job. It was pretty simple instructions. I said it should take you 2 minutes. I'm not sure why it took you that long, but that's okay. We'll practice that in the shows leading up. I reckon you could just tell a bit in your voice, though, Julie, in the last couple of weeks as well. Like, you're just a bit on edge. I've just got a bit of a feeling that you were just a bit overworked or something, not enough recovery time. Do you reckon the same, Brad?
Yeah.
Maybe just not coping with the elite athlete status.
I
can
tell
and stuff.
You, I'm overworked.
Yeah. Something about it, just a bit more high strung.
Yeah. Mm. And probably motivation as well. Like there's he's come off Berlin, which was obviously a massive goal, and there doesn't seem to be anything that's really as significant as Berlin that you're training for, Julian. So it's probably a bit harder as well.
Yeah, it definitely. And if Berlin was like an all-time lifelong career goal achieved, I just don't have the same 216, right, doesn't have the same buzz for me as cracking 220, because that's all I've ever wanted to do. It doesn't have the same significance to go, oh, well, I guess I have to look faster now, so I'll look faster, and just because that's what you're supposed to do. Whereas for me, I'm like, oh, I've made it. Like, I'm there. This is it for me. I'm retiring happy. I'm telling everyone about this for the rest of my life. And I'm still, I think I'll get back that buzz, because Berlin's booked in again. And the marathon's obviously what I love to do. And I think it's where my best event is. So I feel also that I kind of have what I consider that my training nailed for that event. So I'm excited to do it all over again, because and I don't get the same excitement out of writing a program for the track for myself. It's not, it doesn't do the same things for me.
Right, now we're talking too much about
this
stuff.
I'm happy now, I'm back.
I'll just whiz through my week, because we've got a lot more content to cover, and we're like 25 minutes in, I reckon, already. Pretty good week for me. Just went through to Saturday. Yeah, jogged slow until Saturday. Some easy jogging. I've just been jogging real easy. Like, not much is happening quicker than, I don't think I've jogged at 4:30 or quicker pace for a long time. So out for an easy 7K Monday morning, 4:42s. Out for an easy 15K Monday night, 4:36s. Same thing Tuesday morning, 4:43s for 7K. Tuesday night, just did some strides, just did 5K on the track, and did some strides around the bend, so like 200s in like, I don't know, anywhere between 31 and 34, just a bit of a softer session. We didn't really have anything penciled in. I just wanted to tick the legs over, so that was good, just doing a couple of 200s just in the spikes. The Wednesday morning, listened to Brad interview Sean on my medium long run, so 18.5K, just loved every minute of it. I think that's why I created the podcast Tell Me Your Tales in the first place, so I could listen to stories like that, and then I get sick of hearing my own jockey voice, so I never ever get to listen to them. So it was fantastic just to listen to a really good interview and just switch off, so I kind of didn't want it to end, just enjoyed listening to that. And 18K at 4:38s, easy 7K in the afternoon at 4:40s. Thursday morning, 6K, 4:18s. Then I did a 15-minute fartlek on Thursday afternoon. So did the first 15 minutes of mono fartlek. That felt good. Just had Sean ringing in my ears the whole time about not going to that fifth gear. So in the past, I'd probably try and average 3 minutes for that, and I averaged 3:05s, which was nice. And then did one by 500 at the end of it. So coach had me jog for 2 minutes after that session and then punch a 500. So hit that in 1:19 and felt nice and quick. Then what'd we do? Jogged through Friday, went super easy again, 4:46s. Paced the park run up here at Echuca on the Saturday morning. So got a guy I do a bit of work with, Chris Herrett, through he wanted to break 20 minutes and started writing him a plan about, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks ago. And yeah, he ran a 19:42, took a bit of time off his PB, which was good fun. And then went out to the Industrial Estate and did my session. Had a really good mate, Chris Armstrong, in town. He came over from Yermurka and did our park run in the morning. And I said if he wanted to stick around, he could help me do this session. So the plan was to do 10K at 3:20s and then run the last 3K, so 13K in total at 9 to 9:15 and not force anything. And yeah, run the 10K at 3:19 average and then ran 8:50 for the last 3K and just rolled really good. Had Sean ringing in my ears again. Heart rate data was good. Averaged 159 for the whole session. Ran the first K of that kick down in 3 minutes and didn't think it was going to happen. I think it was just that change of pace between the 10K tempo and the kick down, and then just stopped looking at my watch. I was pretty surprised when we hit that last 3K in 8:50, so good signs there. And then, yeah, got out with a very easy 2-hour long run yesterday at 4:33, so 160 or 159.8K for the week. I was tempted to go out and do an extra 200 or 300 metres, but I'm calling it a 100-mile week, and, yeah, happy with the way things are progressing. Whew, geez, I spoke good, fast then.
Good session on Saturday. Like, based on that, no pressure, but you've got to run under 30 minutes for 10. Like, if you can run,
you've got to run under 29:30.
If you can run 8:50 for the last 3K of that session, when you're meant to be running 9:05 to 9:15, yeah, like, that's quick. So
felt good, Brad. Yeah, felt good. Yeah. Feeling good for 2 weeks' time. I'm feeling sharp, and I was a bit worried about that because I wasn't sure. I haven't done much longer stuff. Like, a lot of kind of 2 and 3K reps, but I haven't been doing much where I've been on my feet for a longer period of time, that kind of marathon pace for 10K and then into something. So, but yeah, I was really happy with the fact that I was holding that 3:19 pace, you know, at 155 average kind of heart rate, and it was just kind of ticking along quite nicely. I did have Chris on the bike, and there is some questions about if the industrial estate is short, but we kind of went on a long straight. We didn't spend all the time out there. We kind of come into town, did a bit of a loop, and then went back out there. So, yeah, happy with that. So, good week. But I don't know. I reckon, after hearing Sean, I reckon there's something in this slow jogging. Like, I've never ran this slow in my life on my general jogs and the sessions. And it's pleasant. Like, I enjoy going for my easy runs and just not worrying about, like, sweating and pace and just jogging super slow and keeping the heart rate low. And yeah, I'm just really, yeah, enjoying running at the moment. So,
well, yeah, that's, I moved down here and changed my pace to be much slower, and it fucking paid off for me.
Yeah, it's just nice, isn't it? Yeah, it paid off big time for you. And it's just, I don't know, you're not as, well, when you hear Sean Crichton, a 2:10 marathon guy, say that he jogged at 4:45, like, who am I to go out and run at 4:05 or 4:10 pace? Like, it just doesn't make any logical sense.
Mm. Well, exactly, and that's what I always say to people that maybe, like, either I'm helping with their training or they come in the store and talk about their running, and they say, oh, yeah, normally I run around 4:10 to 4:20. I'm like, wow, like, you wouldn't run with our group because you would be in front. And they're like, oh, okay, who's in your group? And you're like, roll a few names, and they say, oh, okay, so you guys don't run that fast, sure. And then, and you're like, no, we just, like, and it's an easy day. And they start to, it starts to twig, like, oh, maybe I'm not doing this right. Like, I'm always cooked, always burnt out. And that's, they can never run more than 50K a week because they're always, something's going wrong.
Yeah, and Sean said as well about, like, he's doing the easy days easy, but he's really hammering the hard days. And I think that's, I've been really enjoying being able to run super fast and feeling like I'm not, as you said before, Brad, like, finishing sessions, hands on knees, like, not doing that stuff, but you're still running times that in the past you might have had your hands on your knees because you're still tired from the day before.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's a lot to it. Yeah, like, I'm slowly learning, but I've still got I've still probably got 10 seconds of K to go.
Yeah, it's actually more, it's like really fun. Like, I just actually, it's like meditative. Like, I'm finding it's no pressure. Just, I'll just have my heart rate on my screen and I'm just like, as long as it's near 130 or a bit under or a bit over, I don't care how slow I'm going. Listening to podcasts, like, just listening to big, like, Joe Rogan episodes. It's good. Good way.
Cool.
Hey boys, running news. Not a lot happened this week, but we've got a bit of stuff from the Honolulu Marathon. Always seems to get a lot of media this race, and I think it's, you guys might know more, but is it because they kind of have a bit of a whole weekend and they have a mile there, a handicap mile, and usually bring in some big Kenyans and a bit of prize money on the go? You guys know much about it?
No, so, I know nothing about it.
The mile was only, I thought it was the first time this year that they did it. Am I wrong about that?
Don't know, mate.
I thought it might have been the first time they've done it, so... Clearly not that. I think people just love, like, to go to Hawaii.
Yeah. Doesn't seem like the ideal place to run a marathon, though. It'd be, like, hot and humid and stuff there, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I would think so. Like, I'm not lining up to go there, that's for sure.
But anyway, Lawrence Chirono won it in 2:08.26, so the conditions couldn't be too bad if you're running 2:08. And Bridget Kosgei, 2:22, they both smashed the course records. both won $50,000 US, which you think would go quite a long way in Kenya. And Dennis Kometo, once again, pulls out of a marathon. Is he done or what?
Oh, I haven't looked at it.
He got
I don't know.
All he does is pull out these days. I can't remember the last marathon he's finished.
What was the last one he pulled out of?
Tokyo, I reckon.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe something, yeah. No, I don't know. Maybe something else. I could be wrong. How good's this? We're like a running podcast and we just don't know any stats or facts.
Oh, Dennis Kometo. That man is old news.
Yeah. Mm. It was in the headline on Let's Run, though, so that's why I put it in there. Nick Simmons, 800-meter man, runs 3 hours and 35 seconds for his marathon debut. Oof. Thoughts on that one?
Well, he wasn't taking it that serious, though. Like, he didn't go, all right, I'm going to smash a marathon as best as I can. I'm pretty sure he just sort of did it for maybe a little bit of run gum promo, because that's what he's all about.
Because he talked big game when he finished, like retired from running, that he was going to now take on the marathon. His marathon debut was going to be here. But he tweeted his training mileage for the last like 12 weeks and it was pretty soft, like 30 miles a week.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't. Yeah. He might have just been a... I think he does a lot of that to stay relevant for his company that he owns or that he part of, Run Gun.
Yeah, he's a good marketing man, I reckon.
Yeah, I reckon that's why he's staying relevant on all the sites and everything.
Yeah. Do you have his halfway split, Brady?
No, I don't. I've just got finishing time.
Just curious to see what he was actually aiming for.
Yeah, I don't know what he was aiming for in the end. I'm not sure. Mm. We haven't.
I'll look into it.
Yeah.
I'll find out for next week.
Don't bother for next week. Hopefully something else happens in the world of running and we can talk about next week. But yeah, that was that. And that's all I had. Do you guys have anything else for running news this week?
Well,
there was a new world record, wasn't there? Like we spoke about her a couple of weeks ago.
Camille Heron.
Yeah, your girl.
She ran it. Was it a...
12 hours?
Well, on the track, right? 12 hours on the track?
Yeah.
Pretty sure she ran a world record in that. So she's continuing her form through. I didn't really look at it too much. The track, the ultra distance track stuff is really not my go. Like, I can't really, like, sympathize with them. Or you can't get a very good idea about times and stuff for me. Given that it's like running around a track, I've never. It just seems anyone that runs around it for more than an hour to me is that's craziness. Like it goes beyond being a physical thing, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. 400-meter laps, that would do your head in, wouldn't it?
Well, actually, if we want to talk about ultra marathoning world records, I was down in Colac on Wednesday night for a sportsman's night. I was. A guest speaker.
Guest speaker? And we'd just stop here for a while. What were you speaking about?
Being an elite marathoner.
218, guys. Yeah. I would have paid good money to see that. Sorry, keep going.
It wasn't impressive, trust me. but what happened was I was trying to get up some sort of Colac running history, and I don't think a good runner has ever come out of Colac before. And there's no races in town, really. They only just started a running group like a month ago. It's very poor running culture in that town. but what they did used to have was the Australian 6-day race. And it used to be set up in the memorial or the square in Colac City Centre, where it's like 400 metres around. And they ran for 6 days straight. They had a tent on the side where they could sleep if they wanted to. And it ran from like 1983 all the way to 2004. Troopy got back onto it at some point, but tried to spark it up again. I don't think it took off. But in 2003, Yiannis Kouros, the great Greek ultramarathoner, he came down and ran 6 days, 1,039 kilometres, which equals 172 kilometres a day, around this 400 meter track. Just consider that for a second.
It's pretty insane, isn't it?
And he apparently, this was a story from one of the guys there who was volunteering, because all these guys are all old, like Apex and Rotary Club fellas at the Sportsman's Club, and they all used to help out. They used to hate it. 6 days straight of volunteering at this thing for like seven people to compete. They needed volunteers the night round, like the entire 24 hour. But they said he got to the one lap to go until he broke the world record, and he went back in his tent and he said, "Someone find a sponsor to pay a grand or I'm not going to break this record." And so he zipped his tent up and went to sleep, and then someone wiggled his toe and said, "Yeah, we got the grand. You can come and break the record now." How about that?
How was that? That's good marketing skills.
He wouldn't get invited back, I don't think.
No. That's not good. That's kind of not good stuff. Hey, because we don't have limited news this week, we thought we'd have a bit of a training talk and just get our thoughts and opinions on the topic of maintaining training and energy levels and motivation through the festive period, through the festive season. We know a lot of runners out there obviously listen to this while they're trying to maintain their training, and I know personally that training through the next couple of weeks is going to be quite a challenge, and probably the last couple of weeks, but we thought we'd just pick each other's brains on tips and strategies to probably lead into Julian's description of being a bit flat and a bit tired at the moment, a bit overworked, trying to make sure we get through these next couple of weeks without breaking down. Do you want to start with you, Julian? You got any tips for us? You'd have a few social functions coming up, things like that.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
get through.
What I've got a race this weekend that I'm that we co-organise with Tour de Trail.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The Gold Rush Trail Run, and there's so much work involved. So I've been pretty under the pump with that, on top of sort of the store, trying to organise, all the orders that I had to put in for next year, and then my own training on top of that, and then you've got the extra social functions that come up. So my tip for this is don't be afraid to say no to something. Like, you don't have to attend every function and you don't have to stay to the end, and people aren't going to care. Like, if you're a runner, people understand that. If you say, "No, I'm going to go home now," that's all right. You can do that. Like, I'm a big fan of cutting things early, because you're different to those, like, the people that are getting pissed that night and going out to the pub or whatever. You're different to them. And so you behave differently, and it's okay to say, "No, I'm done. I'm going home," early on in the evening. And I tell you what, you'll thank yourself for it when you get home and you go to bed, or you wake up the next day. And the people that are waking up pissed are going, "Geez, I wish I went home when he went." Oh, probably. Who doesn't wake up pissed when they're at it? But they wake up feeling shitty, or they're getting home real late and they're going, "Oh, I wish I went home when he went home." So be that guy. Be the guy that leaves early. That's the way you'll pull it off. But aside from that, I love training through Christmas. Like, you get a bit of time off work. Normally sunny. It's just not as much. Once you actually shut up shop for the year and you're actually on holidays, that's the best time to train.
Do you think, though, you need to, like, so you say no to most things, or you'll let your hair down and celebrate the year on one of those? Like, what, does the running company Ballarat have a Christmas party? You take all the staff out for a couple of beers?
No, fuck that. They buy own beers. They should be buying me beers. I'm giving them employment. I look after them. They can buy shoes with 6% off at the store.
6%. No wonder Brad's got the factory outlet.
We'll go. We only have a few staff, and they I should tell them about this, actually. But on Saturday night, we're going to have some soft drinks somewhere.
I should tell them about this.
But to be serious,
like, you've had a pretty successful year, breakthrough marathon, the running company's been a massive success. You look at your run club kind of things, like, you don't say, "Let's just put running on hold for a couple of nights and just let your hair down."
I got drunk enough that night where we went to Kit Kat Club to last me an entire 12 months. I don't need to get drunk again. It got done.
Yeah, very good.
So, yeah, no. Nah. I struggle to get drunk now. Like, I'll have six beers and I just go to sleep. I'm not exciting. I don't have the the old loose moose in me anymore.
All right, save that for Monday night podcast and the rant.
Yeah, grumpy old man stuff.
Brad, you'd have a pretty busy social calendar this time of the year, wouldn't you? How do you maintain the 180k weeks? You and Viv be hitting up all the like government like fundraisers up there in Canberra?
No, like we don't have a lot on, but like I reckon the last 3 years, I've always used New Year as like a time to reset. So this time last year, I knew I was going to do Canberra Marathon. And so my last 3 weeks of last year, I ran mileage of 80K, 50K and 57K. Which is not much at all. But what I think you need to also realise is if you want to enjoy yourself, that's fine. Because as long as you're getting out a few times a week, like, you know, me running 50K a week is not much at all. But you don't lose fitness that quickly. So obviously, if you've got a major race, like mid-January, late January, you need to keep training through this period. So it comes down to like what your priorities are. But if you don't have anything till, you know, the, I guess, autumn sort of season, having 3 weeks here just to reset and using January 1 as, you know, all right, time to get serious again, having 3 weeks of just jogging and taking the pressure off, you're not going to lose that much fitness. I was going really well 6 weeks into the new year, and that was after 3 weeks of doing very little. So
why are we doing very little, though? Is that because you just couldn't maintain the running through, like, a busy time of the year? Like, you had to put that on pause?
Well, for me, I was having issues with my, like, from that stuff that was happening before Melbourne last year, I was still just having issues with my hips locking up, and I just wasn't enjoying it. And I'm like, you know what? I've got 14 weeks till Canberra. I'm just going to mentally recharge over the next few weeks, and then use January 1 as, because I guess for me, everything resets on, you know, the mileage for the year resets on the 1st of Jan. So that's where I want to, you know, start fresh and try and hit my 120k a week or whatever it is. So yeah, it wasn't because I was boozing.
I like it. I do think it's, I personally, for me, I find it challenging. Like, the weather starts getting a bit warmer and I just tend to get a bit tighter. And I reckon I've just, like this week, I cut Saturday afternoon's run, went to a social thing, probably could have fitted in if I had to, went to a fundraiser on a paddle steamer, listened to Benny Music play a gig, who does the music before and after our show. And I was like, you know what, I'm just going to have a couple beers here and not worry about getting home afterwards and, fitting in a run. So I think it's really, you got to sit down and be organised and figure out if you're going to try and fit everything in, what needs to go and what needs to stay in there. But, as you said, Julian, it's a good time to run because a lot of people aren't running, and I like your point about thinking about yourself as different if you're going to act differently in this time of the year. Because you're right, like, we get to go to international marathons and run well and, hammer through that, which is good.
Yeah, no, you are different, like... I think it's okay to be a little bit, like, it's not like you're better than those other people. It's just you're allowed to, like, say, hey, I've got stuff on that this is going to affect, and you don't. So I'm going to make a call not to do what you're doing. And I'm here. I'm showing, I'm like, it's better I go. I could have stayed at home quite easily. But I did come, so...
And it comes down to what your priorities are, Julian. Like, do you get more satisfaction out of running 218 at Berlin or a Christmas party?
Yeah, for sure. Exactly.
For sure.
That's right.
Yeah.
Depends on how good the Christmas party is.
No,
I'm joking. I'll take 218. That's a joke. I'll give it 218. I'm a 220 guy.
You can have fun after the marathon, exactly.
Yeah.
Very good. Hey, we're running out of time. We've only got about 13 minutes left here, so I might just do a bit of altercation on this. Alteration. Hopefully we don't have any altercations. Moose on the loose. We don't want to cut that segment
moose on
out.
The loose.
I reckon I will get read the listener question because that's a detailed one and we're going to run out of time. So let's go Moose on the loose this week. Product review. Finish off with some Zatopek predictions. Go, Moose.
Ooh.
Loosen up.
Moose,
loosen up.
Yeah, all right. So this is a more personal... Moose on the loose. Like, obviously, I put on a race with Bree and with Chris Ord, who does two of the trails. It's called the Gold Rush Trail Run and runs in Dalesford from Hepburn Springs, and it's a point to point event. We finished down at Sales Hall Winery. It's 22k or 11k if you start at Daleson. And we put this race on because there was very little running races in the area, and there was no trail races anywhere around here. So we thought, well, hey, let's do something like this ourselves. We don't make any money from it. There are entry fees, but it basically pays the event organizer, which is who does all the logistics for insurance and everything. And last year we had a great event. So we started with 300 people and everyone was so positive. What happened was we go past Sailor's Falls, a waterfall, with about 1500 meters to go, and then we climb up a single track, and we can come off the single track straight into the back of the winery and finish in a big paddock at the back, and it's perfect. There's no roads involved anywhere. It's great. And this year, about 2 weeks before the event, Parks Victoria, who manage the land that the race is on, have come through and denied our permit to finish in the winery. And there is some backwards little bylaw, section 43, part A, number B or something, where it states that you can't access parks land from private property. And the reason is because they don't want commercial enterprise taking advantage of parks land. So, for instance, if someone operated like a tour company from their land, they're not allowed to do that. But last year, we were given an exemption for it because there was no negative effects. They couldn't see any issues from other neighbours getting upset. And there was basically no reason for this bylaw to be enforced. And what's happened this year is without any warning or without any discussion, really, Parks Victoria have basically said, no, you can't use this back gate. It's not a gate. We opened the fence up. We can't do this. And they gave zero explanation why. They made up falsities about last year's event, about what was said to us then, and they were blatant lies. I've got copies of everything. This is getting a bit personal because it's basically what they're telling us is we need to take the runners out of the forest onto a main road, basically, run them down the side of a main road, putting everyone at risk. It's not like a small road. It's the main road from Melbourne into Daleson. And we're supposed to, Parks Victoria prefer us to do that and then take them down a side road and into the front way of the property, adding an extra 2 to 3 kilometres onto our route. And Chris Ord, the other race director, or the true race director, he said, well, this is totally dangerous. Like, why would you want to do this? There's so many better options here. But Parks Victoria, because they are so short-sighted and so inflexible and out of touch with anything to do with their land, events on their land, have come back and said, no, you're going on the road, and you can deal with any consequence that happens out there. And this is, we put in a lot of appeals and we tried to talk to as many people as we could, but essentially it comes down to one ranger sitting in an office. She's probably never been on the trail in her life. She doesn't understand any type of safety issue with events, and she's sitting there and found some bylaw in the back of probably a novel to point out the reason why we can't do something. And she's increased the risk, the safety risk for 400 people this year running. And that's my rant this week, for sure. Like, we're pissed off, really pissed off. Putting people at risk purely because she just wants to be right and she won't accept that there's other alternatives. Coupled with that, the maintenance on the trail by Parks Victoria is disgraceful because this is a single track, and this is the Goldfields Trail. This is a major, like, advertised, promoted trail that runs all the way from Bendigo to Ballarat. That all the tourism boards absolutely love it because it increases people in the area. You can mountain bike on it, you can walk on it, run on it. In some spots, you can take horses for trail rides on it. And Parks Victoria have let it overgrown so much that you literally cannot even see the trail. There's blackberries straight across it. There's grasses that have totally covered the trail. Sword grasses, there's thistle bushes. Their job is to maintain the trail. They're not doing that. Coupled with that, they're not allowing people to use it properly, and they're putting people's lives at risk by taking them onto a major road when they could just basically allow them to go 3 meters off the trail into someone's land. And this is probably why I've been so stressed the last fortnight, just trying to deal with this bullshit.
Yeah, I reckon that might have a bit to do with it.
Yeah, they've got a slogan, Parks Victoria. It's healthy parks, healthy people. But anyone who's ever dealt with that organisation, they always come back and say, healthy parks, no people, because they make it so hard to use their land for any type of event or race, because they control it with an iron fist.
Yeah, I've got nothing, Brad. You got something?
No, it just sounds like a bit of a modern-day Steve Prefontaine, except it's fighting Parks Victoria instead of the AAU.
But in this day and age, with everyone being overweight, unhealthy, and sitting inside, and we go out and try to put an event on this land, and they pull this tiny, meaningless bullshit to stop, or not to stop the event, but certainly we'll be assessing whether it goes ahead next year. They could just crush us by being this pedantic. It's just bureaucracy gone mad.
Yep.
Mm.
Yep. So what are you doing? You're running on the road. End of story, full stop. Trail run, going on the road.
Have to. It's insane. You should see this email correspondence and how dumb these parks people are.
Keep fighting, Prey.
Keep fighting.
Yeah, the fight's over now. Like, we lost. We just have to deal with it now. But next year, there's going to be some hoo-ha, that's for sure.
Get a petition, GoFundMe, all that kind of stuff. Get it sorted.
Well, I really would love people to know what these people are saying, like what these parks people are saying. If people knew the details and their explanations, there would be a backlash.
I love it. Love the emotion. Good work. Mm, keep fighting. Yeah. Keep fighting for the underground runners out there, the general punters. Help them out.
I'm the saviour.
Look after their safety.
Yeah.
The king of the trails.
Very good. I've moved on. Now it's about getting this race done properly.
That's this weekend. Hey, we might can that, what do you reckon, product review. I want to give it respect, but I understand that we've only got a few minutes left, so I think we should go into a bit more detail next week and do that product review. They've supported us, and I don't want to cut them short and just speak for a couple of minutes, because we'll definitely want to go into a bit of detail there. This weekend, fellas, or this week coming up, Zatopek's on. Got any predictions?
I don't really know what shape everybody's in, but just looking at the start list, if Paddy Cannon is running, which is on the start list, I'll tip him for the win. And then I'll go with Brett Robinson and Stewie McSween to round out the minor places. And I guess supporting the Canberrans, I'll go for Emily Brickachek. Recently been coached by Sean Crichton. Heard she's going reasonably well, body's in one piece, which is good. So I'll go Emily for the win.
10K debut. She ran 10K before?
No, she has run one before.
So, yeah. He did say that in the interview, didn't he? I think that's in. That wasn't in part one. It's in part two. So they're going to listen to this and hear that, I think.
Yep.
Julian, what about you? Got any hot tips?
I haven't looked at the list, but I would say that Harry Summers should be like thereabouts given his race and what it. Like, he would do well for him to win this race, put it that way. So I reckon he'll be up in the front pack giving it a nudge, I reckon.
He's guaranteed, isn't he? If he wins with a B,
that's right. He's got to be automatic. So I reckon that's why there's a lot riding on him to do well there. And then Dave McNeil, you can't count Dave McNeil out over 10K. That man, on his day, he'll beat anyone in Australia. So... yeah, I'm going to throw those two names into it.
I think you've covered those five names you guys are listed. That's where the winner's going to come from. There's no one else that probably is deserved of a mention, who can win outside of those five guys. Interested to see how Andrew Buchanan goes. Bendigo boy stepping up for probably his first serious 10K. I don't think he's run Zatopek before. I think he won or come second at third at Steigen last year. So I'd say he'd go well under 29 minutes. And my boy Jared Clifford in the kids under 23K race. Watch out. I'm tipping him to win it.
Shout out to Ali Pashley's run in the 10 as well. And in the ladies race, I haven't seen a field list.
Eloise Wellings is there. Emily Brickishet, Jess Trengrove, I've got in front of me now. I'm trying to Linda Spencer from WA, Sinead Diver had that good run at State 5K not so long ago. Virginia Maloney.
Jin Maloney.
She wrote in a very nice email to us today. Did you get that one? I sent it through to you boys.
Yeah, thanks, Jin.
She's enjoying the podcast each week. So Celia Sullivan. Hey, when are they picking the marathon tent? That's going to be coming up soon, don't they?
I thought it was mid-December, but yeah, not sure. I'm going to back in Trengrove. She hasn't won one of these, has she? Is that a pick?
No, I don't think she has.
I'll be interested.
Over Eloise Wellings.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Just on Trengo. She's done a whole lot of just following her on Instagram and stuff. She's been helping out massive at that Kids Pacific School Games or whatever. She's been putting in a mountain of work, being a pretty good ambassador for the sport. Been pretty impressed with her kind of, I don't know if she's getting paid for it, but yeah, she seems to be putting in a mountain of hours helping out the next generation of runners coming through. So it'd be good to see her win it. It'd be good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. Nah, don't know who's going to win that female. Talia Hayes, Elmore girl, just down the road, debuting. She'd only be about 17, 18, I reckon. So running an open Zatopek should be good experience for her. You going to go down, yes. Julian?
I don't know. There's a lot going on at the moment, especially fixing this course, and I don't think I'll get a chance. I'd love to. If there's a stream, I'll wait it out at home. But it's like an hour away. You got to get through traffic. It's not my deal.
Yeah, rightio. Brad, what do you got coming up this week?
Easy week, so just one session and then park run on Saturday. So looking forward, because I got sick before my last one, so I'm looking forward to getting out there and seeing what I can do.
Yeah.
What do you do a real race?
Well,
yeah, I've been saying this for weeks. You've got to step up, Brad. Well, lucky you bought that
car. I've done this park run so many times. I know exactly what shape I'm in based on what I run around that course. So yeah.
You need to know what shape you're in. You'll know what shape you're in when you run a race and you have competition.
Well, what race can I do this weekend that's a 5-minute drive from home?
Yeah, you got to look outside the box.
I drove 2.5-3 hours the other day to run a B-grade 5K. You got to put some commitment in.
It's all right. I'll get myself up for this race.
Yeah. I'm sure you will. You'll get yourself right up.
What's he going to run, Julian, before we end? What's he going to run? What time?
Oh, it'll be pretty good.
Has he got enough speed in the legs? Oh, I reckon he's tough, but I don't know about his top end speed.
I'm going to go 14:52. Yep.
14:52. Yeah, he'll be disappointed.
Generous.
Generous.
No, I won't.
You'll be disappointed.
No, I won't.
You're tough, isn't? Yeah, nah.
If I go under 15, I'll be happy.
Having you around 14:46 on that course, it's fast, isn't it? And short.
I ran 14:48 2 weeks before Canberra last year. My PB's 14:43 there.
There wouldn't be too many park runs in Australia who have gone quicker than that, 14:43. Liam Adams.
Yep.
I reckon you'd be second or third.
Well, Marty holds the record on that course at 14, just under 14:30 maybe. And Michael Roger has run 14:42.
Fucking gun that bloke.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll find out next week.
Any chance someone will come and help you out, tow you through, or give you a race? Or just off the front by yourself?
Rogues might turn up. That'd be good.
Yeah, we should tee that up.
There's no money on it. He won't be there.
15 minutes will be good.
Yeah. Alrighty-o. Good show, fellas. Thanks for your time again. Julian, what are you doing? You're just de-stressing all week. Nothing to report. Put this run on.
De-stressing? Yeah. Are you kidding? I've got this race Saturday.
Yeah, but you just got to ease things off running-wise, though, aren't you? You're not going to put too much pressure on yourself. I'm a bit worried about you, that's all.
I'll just be cruising during, like, from a running standpoint, I'll be cruising, but geez, I'll be busy.
Still racing Steigen next weekend, 23rd.
I think so, yeah. Why not?
Yeah. Field's looking good. It's going to be a good field for us, I reckon.
It'll be a good field. I don't know whether it'll be a good field for us.
Well, as long as none of those guys come down who have ran Zatopek and then they want to run again at Steigen, that's going to put a bit of a spanner in the works.
You ran 8:50 on Sunday morning, mate.
Saturday morning.
Get some balls and get to the front.
Yeah, I'm going to go practice like sprinting every third lap, because aren't they putting prize money out for every third lap? Need to get some petrol money before the race starts.
Yeah, you could do that. $200.
$200. All right, boys, thanks for that. Brad, lead us into this interview. What are they going to hear in part two?
Yeah, so, part two is, I guess, getting more onto the second coming of Sean Crichton. So he's sort of come back into track races. Also a little bit about why we aren't producing, the depth of marathoners that we once had, and a bit about his role as a national selector. So enjoy.
Beautiful. We're all over the shop tonight, but hopefully the listeners get something out of that. Thanks again for your time, boys, and we'll talk next week after Brad runs about 14:30 at Parkrun.
Whatever. See you, boys.
Thanks, fellas.
See ya.
I just stopped racing. I didn't. I always thought that I'd do another race, but I didn't.
Yeah. Well, I think I met you in sort of 2006, 2007, something like that. And then I know I was doing some work for you in a law firm around 2010 or 9-10, and you weren't very fit.
I was fat.
At all. and even up until a couple of years ago, was it 2 years ago, you were around 40 minutes for 10K?
No, that was about 6 years ago.
Oh, 6 years ago, yeah.
So it's been a slow train coming. So about 6 years ago, I was 8 years ago, because Gretchen, my daughter's now 8, and it was a couple of months after she was born, and this was the line in the sand moment where I was, each year I was probably putting on about 2 kilos or so, and then... And I was looking in the mirror and seeing the double chin, which I didn't like to see. And then going for a run with Stella, and she was pushing Gretchen in the pram, and she was back at the AIS, and Stella started pulling away from me going up the hill, and I actually couldn't keep up. I was like, oh dear, have I regressed this much? So and at the time I was a weekend warrior. I'd go out for my Saturday run and I'd run it hard, with a plan to run Sunday, but I'd hurt myself Saturday, so I couldn't run Sunday, and then I'd be right again for the following Saturday. Anyway, so I challenged Stella to a 10K race in the Canberra Thomas Bun Run that year, and knowing that she'd run about 40-30, and so I, off 8 weeks of training, I ran flat to the boys 40.08.
Yeah.
That then became an annual goal to try and improve on my Canberra Times time.
Yeah.
And I got down to about 35 minutes, and that's when I decided to do 6 foot track, because I was like, I can't get myself motivated to do any more training than to get myself in 35 minute shape, or sort of 35 high. So I thought, okay, what's a goal that's really an event that's really challenging that I'll have to train hard for, but I'm actually keen to do? And so 6 foot track was that. So I've done that the last 3 years, and I probably wouldn't have done it again next year, except at the Canberra Thomas Fun Run this year, I actually ran well enough. I finished and I was like, oh, that was a headwind up Adelaide Avenue today. Oh, Strava measures it at 10.1. Oh, it's 33 high. That's probably worth 33 flat on the track, noting I'm a bit quicker on the track. Wonder what the Australian Old Man record is. Mm-hmm. And that's when I looked it up and it was 32.52 or 32.54. It's like, actually, I might skip the marathon. And so I was going to do Melbourne. I might actually do a track season.
Yeah.
So that's when the seed was sown to have a crack at the Australian Old Man over 50, 5 and 10K records. And about that time, Emily Brickachick and I started working together, so it actually worked out perfectly, because we then just became training partners for each other.
Yeah.
I don't want to put the pressure on Emily ahead of Zatopek next week, but She's ticking along nicely.
Yeah, it's pretty inspiring to see you getting back out there, because I'm sort of getting towards the end of my, I guess, serious running.
Yeah.
Not that I've ever, gone close to times that you're running, but I've always thought to myself that as soon as I don't think I can run a PB anymore, I won't want to compete.
Yeah.
Have you ever had that feeling?
Absolutely.
Because obviously, you're a long way behind PBs, but,
Absolutely. I didn't want to. I was, after years and years and years of competing, I got tired of doing the training, tired of watching what I eat and drink, and tired of, didn't want to do it anymore. And so that's where I went years where I was running once a week and drinking a lot of red wine and drinking a lot of beer and eating a lot of chocolate. Now I still drink a lot of red wine, drink a lot of beer and eat a lot of chocolate, but run again.
Yeah.
And I think that's the change. I was saying to someone the other day, I'm still 10 kilos heavier than I used to race at. And I'm sure I could run, I could probably run 30 seconds quicker over 5K if I lost 10 kilos.
Yeah.
In fact, I probably almost certainly could. And that'd be...
Which would be getting close to the world record.
That'd be close to the world old man record. But I'm not prepared to do it.
Yeah.
Because I've done that, I've lived that life of discipline where I would have one alcoholic drink a week for 6 months of the year. At 50, I still want to live a normal life, and if I want to have a glass of red wine or two and a beer and a piece of chocolate while I'm watching the footy or the cricket, I want to do that. But I'm thrilled at the decision to run a few track races, even though it might seem a bit silly, some old bastard coming back and doing a few races. It's almost like the midlife crisis without getting the sports car. It's the little things you don't think about. The smell of the track. Getting some new spikes and getting the spike spanner out and putting your spikes in your shoes and then trying them on to make sure they fit right. And
sore calves in the morning after races.
Sore calves. It's absolutely fantastic.
And I guess having, come from a guy who's run over 200 kilometres a week to now trying to race, competitively as a 50-year-old, what adjustments have you had to make? And I guess what advice do you have for an older athlete to stay in one piece but still be able to, run to the best of their ability?
Yeah, I've read that as you get older you need to cut your volume and do more speed work. That... I've started doing speed work again over the last 4 months. Before that, it was basically because I was training for 6 foot track.
Mm.
I was going out and doing 3 to 3.5 hour runs on a Sunday. Up lots of hills. And again, that got me just really, really fit. But I think the message is you don't recover quite as well. But in the last... And people might think, I came out and ran 15:34 on Saturday night, which, as a young guy, that's not setting the world on fire, but for a 50-year-old, that's it's decent running. And people might think, he ran 13:17 when he was, in his 20s. You should be able to run 15:34. But no, it didn't happen overnight. My Strava will confirm the last 2 years I've averaged 95 Ks. That's a genuine average.
Yep.
So there's been plenty of running, but... The key thing is I've been sensible, not doing super sessions, just doing, if anything, being a bit more conservative. And for the last 6 months, I've been doing 2 massages a week and a Pilates session a week.
All right. Do you know you're into Pilates?
Once a week. So treatment twice a week and Pilates once a week. And that's just meant I've been injury-free.
Yeah. And I'd say looking at your Strava, the one constant, and I mentioned it in a podcast a couple of weeks ago, if you look back at your last year of Strava, I reckon you would have averaged 33, 34 kilometres
every Sunday.
Yeah. I reckon that's a constant with you. Like, you place so much emphasis on that long run. Not fast, but just long.
In fact, on this last Sunday, so my calves are sore. It was probably one of the few Sundays in the last 12 months where I didn't run more than 30K.
So getting into a bit more, I guess, you've been in the sport for so long now, what changes have you seen in the sport? Have you seen a lot of change?
Oh, yes. Yep. I think I've seen, and I don't want to poo-poo modern training methodologies because then all of a sudden you sound like some...
This is my next question, I think.
you sound like some grumpy old man, and I'm not saying what we used to do was right and what people are doing now is wrong, but I sometimes see people doing, really fast long runs, for example. And train.
I wasn't thinking
so much of you, but it's across the board. Yeah, it's not just in Australia, it's around the world.
Yeah.
And people are saying, you have to do that, because if Kipchoge's running 2:03, you can't run 2:03 if you're running around your long runs at 4 to 4 minute 10 per K.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to run them quicker.
Yeah.
And I say, you're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. If you want to run 2:03, you need to be able to go out and you need to be able to do a 30K run where the last 10K, you kick it down and run it in 30K.
Yeah.
But before you run 2:03, show me your 2:13.
Yeah.
Too many guys are trying to run 2:03 before they run 2:13.
Yeah. I guess, like, in relation to that, there's obviously been a real change now of marathoners doing marathon specific sessions,
and
as the phys ed teacher in you about specificity.
Yeah.
So
that's the art and the science, and the logic, and this is the old, if you're going to run 3 minute k's for a 3K, you've got to be able to do reps in 2:50.
Yeah.
You can't have had a quickest rep of 3:04 and go and run quicker than that on average for your 3K's.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But you can do it.
Yeah.
And it's the logic absolutely tells you. It absolutely tells you. My marathon PB, 2:10, works out at 3:08 per K.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have gone out and run. Not one of my long runs at any stage would I have run 3:08.
Yeah, and what, maybe 16K would have been the longest that you would have sustained 3:08, other than maybe racing at half, like...
Absolute longest.
Yeah.
That would have been once a month.
Yeah.
Logic tells you needs to do that. You need to do that.
Yeah.
But empirical evidence tells you you don't.
Yeah.
Deke didn't do it. Mono didn't do it. Troopy didn't do it. PC didn't do it.
Yeah.
I didn't do it.
So this is the amazing thing. I've always, whether I've sat down with Mono or whatever, and it's like, how does doing hard 20 minutes sessions, which is, typically what you guys would do.
Yep.
And 2 hours 30 or 3 hours, but way slower than marathon pace.
Yep.
How does that somehow bring to be able to run, 3:08 for 42K, like compared to what they're doing now where, you'll do 5x5K with a K float, which but each 5K is at marathon pace. It's,
I know what you're saying.
It's,
I can't explain it.
I think
part of it is running's a weight bearing activity, and it's physically demanding. And I think you can probably get away with doing a session like 5x5K if you then jog for 3 days.
Yeah.
Maybe even jog for 5 days. It comes back to the, if you're going to super compensate, you need to recover.
Yeah.
The Moroccans and the South Africans don't do the 2.5 hour, some of them do, of course. Mm. Their system is you go out and you run a hard 90 minutes or a hard 2 hours.
Yeah.
But they jog for 5 days afterwards.
Yeah.
So there's absolutely not one way to skin the cat.
Yeah.
But you've got to recover.
Yeah.
And one of my favourite running quotes is, and it's most relevant to the marathon, and it's from Bill Squires, who I'm pretty sure coached Salazar. He coached a hell of a lot of the top US. Bill, I think he coached Bill. We should look up and see who he coached. Yeah. I reckon he coached Salazar and Bill Rogers, who were the greats of the 80s, of course. Yeah. And the quote is, it's the long run that puts the tiger into the cat.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's not the fast long run, it's the long run.
Yeah, yeah. And do you think that maybe doing those longer marathon specific sessions, there's just too much risk involved and you maybe have raced your race before you get there?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. And I've got a sports science degree, but it's a long time since I've read all the textbooks. But maybe you get the mitochondrial adaptations and the capillarization and that sort of thing, that's in the glycogen storing effects just as well from a long easy run as you do from a long fast run.
Yeah.
So the long fast run, yeah, it might get you a bit fitter, but in the long term it doesn't.
Mm.
It might get you in the short, and I guess it's the short game versus the long game.
Yeah.
The training that Deke and Monner and people like and myself, we didn't miss more than a week at a time injured.
Yeah. I guess where I find the benefit, like I've done a few sessions of, I've never done 5x5K, but I've done, you know, 5x4K with a K flow. And I think the benefit I get coming from the shorter stuff with that is more just that mental of just locking into marathon pace for a long period of time, which you don't get when you're out for 3 hours jogging, you don't get, you know, when you're running hard for 20 minutes. So it's more of that mental side that I feel that I get benefit from, but I just find it amazing that guys have been able to. And my next question is, why aren't we producing marathoners? You mentioned it before. You know, was it Merv who was around 2:15?
Oh yeah, Merv. Yeah.
But there's just so many guys. Like I worked with a guy at Swimming Australia, Colin Neave.
Yeah.
Who's run 2:16 in Canberra, and you know, nobody's ever heard of him.
No.
But so what do you think it is?
And I have this chat occasionally on social media with some of my mates in other countries, Johnny Downs in Ireland, Mark Coogan in the US. Some of my mates, and we've all got the same view. There's actually a guy who I saw on social media is actually doing an experiment so he realised there was a guy in his club who ran 2:15 back in the 80s and was just sort of a good club runner and is now realising he'd actually be one of the best in the UK now. And this guy's doing an experiment. He's going to go back and follow this guy's old school training. The old school training, there's always a group in Melbourne, there'd be a group in Ballarat, there'd be a group in Canberra, there'd be a group in Sydney, there'd be a couple other smaller groups. There'd be five or six of us all doing 200 Ks a week.
Mm.
Every week. Week in, week out. And you'd be just getting better. There's not enough groups doing 200 k's a week.
So you think 200's the minimum to be able to run?
Oh, I don't think it's a minimum. You know, Steve Jones ran 207 and broke the world record running 140 k's a week and running quicker. There's no one size fits all.
Yeah.
The Australian way has traditionally been run 200 k's a week and do it every week.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know, I don't know if you know Dave Cronitti, but he ran 2:17 in Berlin. And,
yeah, great run.
He's constantly logging like 240, 250K. Like a lot of it's slow, but I guess there's merit in it. And his speed seems to actually be improving as a result.
I'd like to say something about the speed of marathon. You hear people say long, slow running produces slow runners. It's absolute rubbish.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned in a podcast, so before Berlin, before I got injured, I've been doing monofartlek for 15 years. Yeah. I ran a monofartlek PB when I was actually training for Berlin.
My 27:31 10K, I actually wasn't, which was run at Zatopek in 96, I wasn't running Zatopek that year. I was training for the Houston Marathon a few weeks later. And I got about 5 weeks out from the marathon, which is getting close to Zatopek. Well, in fact, I went up to Noosa to do the 5K, thinking I'm going to get absolutely smoked. I've been doing 220Ks a week and no speed work whatsoever. I'm going to get absolutely smashed and 13:47 to win. It's like, God, the last couple of times I've done Noosa Bolt, what I run at Noosa, I go through that. I can run that the first half of the 5K at Zatopek.
Yeah.
Went through 5K at Zatopek, 13:41. And purely, I was just so aerobically strong.
Yeah.
And that's probably what was missing from my 10K training before was 220 Ks a week, if I could handle it, suited me, most of it being long, slow running,
yeah.
suited me better than 180 Ks a week.
Yeah. Like, obviously, like, the way that you train yourself, like, you've got so much knowledge when it comes to running, but I guess with family life and your work, you haven't, I guess, coached a lot.
No.
Is it something that you would like to do down the track? You mentioned you're now coaching Emily.
Yeah, I absolutely love coaching. And, you know, when I was in Ballarat, final year of uni, I did a coaching major, we had to do some coaching. And I went to St. Pat's in Ballarat, which is where Mona went, was the powerhouse of distance running in Ballarat, and it had, you know, guys like Steve McMahon and Chris Howley and some really good young guys at the time. I went to Ballarat and Clarendon College, who had no distance running history and tradition, and said, oh, anyone want to join a distance running program? So we've got a bunch of guys who basically done no running. By the end of that season, we had a couple of Vic Champs medalists and an Australian Champs medalist.
Yeah.
And we beat St. Pat's for the first time in donkey's years.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that. And you know, and I took the luckily enough to have the coach, national coaching coordinator job at Athletics Australia for a year, and the bright lights of law sort of drew me back, because if you put it this way, if we were in America and there was 50 full-time coaching jobs available, I'd probably still be coaching. But when there's one, and you've got other options, it's not a long-term career move.
Did you mention to me at one point when you were over in the US that you, when you had the option of maybe taking up the with the Bowman?
Oh, that was
coaching position.
No, that was post then that I was expressing interest with it.
Oh,
had
okay.
Had a chat to them. But I absolutely love coaching. Mm-hmm. Would I do more of it? I think probably if we fast forward 10 years, I think the answer will be yes.
Yeah,
right now, the answer is very limited, because I just don't have time. But works out perfectly with Emily, because I don't have time, because I don't have time to if I want to go to work, have family time, and go for a run myself, I don't have time to coach on top of that.
Yeah.
Works out perfectly with Emily at the moment, because my running time, the running I'm doing, the pace and the type of training is exactly what I would be prescribing for her, so we can do it together.
Yeah.
So kill two birds with one stone, so it's perfect.
Yeah. And you were advising me when I ran my 10K PB, first time I got under 30
that's
minutes.
Good.
but also, like, even though you're not, like, well, you are coaching now, but I heard a podcast that you've obviously influenced, like, Adam Didick, and the way that, you know, he's now one of Australia's sort of top coaches. So you've obviously had an influence, even though you're not actively involved.
And I guess I'm available to anyone, Adam and anyone else, to shoot the breeze at any time. You know, I absolutely love it.
On a side note, so a lot of people won't realise or don't realise that you're a national selector as well.
And, yeah.
I guess it'd be interesting, and, like, I've never really spoken too much about it, but what's the process in terms of how many selectors are there? Do the discussions get quite heated?
Yeah.
And what happens if, you know, people disagree? Like, how do they actually come to a decision?
Yeah. It's a good question, and I feel very passionate about selecting. You know, 92, that'll still get me fired up and keep my blood pressure up if I talk about having been named in the team and then dropped at the last minute. And despite at the time being national champion, having the qualifying time, being young, being the World Student Games defending champion, still not getting picked, it still pisses me off all these 25 years later. So I know how important it is to people, and I've run some appeals for, you know, Scotty Westcott and Andrew Leatherby and some javelin throwers and before becoming a selector. So I am acutely aware how important the role is. So the three selectors are Dion Russell, who's the chairman of selectors, who's a terrific guy and really well organised and really gets all the stats altogether. Melinda Gainsford, who is, we're all across all the events, but Melinda's obviously really across the sprints, and myself. So Mona was selected before I was, so it's actually good to have that continuity of a distance runner as a selector. They used to actually have winter and summer selectors, so they, so back in the old days, you used to have a different selection committee for track and cross country relative to and roads, whereas we pick all the teams, juniors, seniors, cross country, the whole kit and caboodle. Do we ever disagree? Yes, we do. Does it get heated? No. We have good rational debates. There's mutual respect between the three of us. There was, I won't go into what event it was, but as recently as last year, we had one selection which came up, and I said to Dion and Mel, my view is we should go this way, but it's an absolute borderline, and for these reasons, it's an absolute borderline selection. And they said, oh, our view is it should go this way. It is an absolute borderline. And I said, no, that's fine. I agree with if your view, and if it's 2-1, it's 2-1.
Yeah. So generally, if there's a disagreement, it just comes down to the fact that two will go this way, one will go that way.
But we'll listen to each other.
Yeah.
And there have been times where we were leaning one way, and one person has a really good point and able to put a good argument, and the other two will go, I actually hadn't thought of it that way. But this bearing in mind, and I think this is what a lot of people forget, we only discuss the borderline selections.
Yeah.
The ones, if we don't discuss Sally Pearson.
Yeah, so if you, because there's obviously the selection criteria that if you run an A and you win nationals, you're automatic. You can't take that off.
So. Zatopek's next Thursday night. If someone wins, whoever wins the Zatopek, if they've got a B, they'll go.
Yeah.
If they come second and they've got an A, they'll go. We don't even, it's not even a discussion.
Yeah.
It's tick the box. What will then become a discussion is in February, if there are two spots and there's one left and there are three qualifiers. The discussion, I'm looking forward to it from an academic point of view, but I'm not looking forward to it because there's going to be some real disappointment. But it's exciting to be in this position that we have to have make the tough decision. The women's marathon team for the Commonwealth Games, I mean, this is the best depth we've ever had.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd be going out on a limb to say that Lisa Jane Waitman and Jess Trengrove are safe.
Yeah.
That third spot, you've got some really, really strong contenders, contenders for that third spot, and people are going to be disappointed.
Yeah. No, I completely agree.
Do we go just on time? Maybe. Do we go based on championship history and head-to-head? Well, head-to-head, it's not like a track where you can have... people might not have raced as much. So there's a whole lot of elements which need to come into consideration.
But it's great with the marathon at the moment. Even the guys, the fact that this, like, not that 2:19 will generally get you into a team, but it's certainly getting more guys probably around my level that go, you know what? There's no way that I'm going to run 28 low for a 10K or 13:20 odd for a 5. But you know what? 2:19 is achievable. And I won't make the team off that. But I could say that I've at least made the Commonwealth Games qualifier or whatever.
Exactly.
So it's good for the sport.
Oh, I couldn't agree more.
No.
And I think back to the selectors. So Dion, Mel and I are all inclusive by selectors by nature.
Yeah.
So... however, we can be as inclusive as we like. If the Board of Athletics Australia, who endorse the selection criteria, make a restrictive criteria, well, you just can't. You've got to follow the criteria, and you can't pick it. So I think we're at a nice time at the moment where the board is keen on picking people, and the selectors are keen on picking people.
Yeah.
The challenge, which I only just read today, is apparently there is a quota set by the Commonwealth Games Federation on how many people there can be unless they go back cap in hand for ask for more spots in track and field for Gold Coast.
Yeah.
Now, that's going to be a challenge. I read it quickly, but I think the number was 76. 76 for a home Commonwealth Games isn't a lot.
No.
So that actually may come down to, and that's how I got cut in 92. There was 42 in the team, and they said you're going to have 37, mm-hmm. so you could get rid of five or seven or however many it was. If we put forward 90 names and we then have to trim it back to 76, that's when it's tough, because you're then saying, making assessments between events, and you say, okay, well, particularly for the Commonwealth Games, you might have a field event where someone's ranked fourth in the Commonwealth but 200th in the world, mm-hmm. versus a track event against the Kenyans or the Jamaicans where you might be ranked sixth in the Commonwealth and 100th in the world.
Mm.
Who do you pick?
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
We'll cross those bridges.
We're about to wrap up. I guess, you know, you've had an incredible career and, you know, like to break Ron Clark's Australian record. And I guess a lot of people as well won't realise that you're the main reason that Craig Mottram got his first Olympic berth in Sydney by giving up one of your runs in the 5K.
Yeah.
Just goes to show the type of guy you are, all-round good guy.
Thanks, Croaks. And I was actually saying to someone the other day that my 5K on Saturday night was my first 5K on the track since the Olympic trials in 2000. Yeah. So the logical conclusion for that would be, well, you didn't make the Olympic team at 5K, but the answer was, well, I did.
Yeah.
But gave him a spot to Mottram.
Yeah. Which is not, there's not a lot of people out there that would do that, so credit to you. But all the best. I believe we're going off to Steigen 10K to try and crack the Aussie 10K record. So what's...
Aussie Old Man 10K record.
Aussie, yeah.
Okay. I'd love to have it. I saw Benny Saint on the weekend. I'd love to say, Benny Saint, your 27:24 is going down, but...
So what time do we have to beat there?
It's 32:50-something. I think it's 32:54.
All right.
So I think my old rule of thumb was double your 5K and out a minute, which gives me plenty of leeway, but it's easier said than done. So I'll be trying to run 32:30, 32:20, which would be well under the record. But I'll just looking forward to getting out and enjoying my first 10K on the track since... Maybe, I'm just trying to think when it was, 2002 probably.
And then are we looking to use that track speed to maybe go the marathon next year?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, what's the time for that?
The Australian over 50 marathon record, and I do know that because I was looking that up this time last year, it's 2:30:51. And when I was planning on running Melbourne Marathon back in October, a few people said, oh, do you think you can get the Aussie over 50 record? I said, actually, no. I reckon I'm in 2:30. This is back in July, August. So I reckon I'm in 2:33 shape. And that's realistic. And going out at 2:30 pace, I reckon I'd blow up. And part of that is to run 2:30, you've got to be able to run 32.5 for 10K. Mm-hmm. So now that I'm back notionally in 32:30 10K shape, it means I probably should be able to off... I haven't really dropped my volume off. Yeah. I should be able to run 2:30, but that's as we know, the marathon's a funny event and easier said than done. But no, I'm keen to have a crack at a marathon next year, and would probably have a crack at running 2:30.
Yeah. Oh, we'll keep an eye on you, and thanks for your time tonight. I could chat running with you all day, that's for sure. And Brady and Julian will both be down at Steigen, so you'll be on the start line with them. So
I'll be on the start line, and I reckon they'll. We're probably about a lap ahead, maybe a lap and a half. But anyway, I'll try and stay within a lap of them.
Yeah, all right. Well, thanks for your time tonight. All right.
Thanks,
Craig. All the best.
Great, thanks.
Under cover. you white or black. Just show love to everyone you meet. Doesn't matter if it don't come back. Oh, the show.